Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? These are your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. Just a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my prior? God, so many.
It was perfect. What's she talking about? This is not
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first.
Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. Today, I'm joined by another literary agent from the Darley Anderson Agency. It's the lovely Lydia Silver. Hi, Lydia.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It's really great to have you. Let's start by saying I spoke to your colleague recently, Chloe Davis. So I know that September is a busy time for agents, as that's what she said. And then I was thinking, is there ever not a busy time for literary agents?
I suppose Christmas.
Well, yeah.
Publishing kind of shuts down from December, and I wouldn't be sending anything out. But having said that, last year I spent the whole of December getting a manuscript ready to go out on submission in January.
Oh.
So it maybe wasn't quite as quiet as I thought. And the other time that everyone says is more quiet is the summer. But again, I've actually sold a couple of things this summer. So I can't guarantee that that's the case either. So I don't think there's any really, really downtime. It's that sort of thing where there's always something nagging at you, like, oh, I should be reading this, or I should be considering this. If you're not reading, you feel a little bit guilty about it. But you kind of balance your own time, though. So it all works out.
Yeah. And it's one of those jobs that doesn't really stay within the set times of the premise. Like, all throughout the year, you're always receiving submissions. So like that never slows or stops.
Yeah, it's very much, it's a job that kind of can expand to fill whatever time you allow it.
Yeah.
And you get submissions whenever. And we don't shut to submissions. I think some agencies do.
Mm-hmm.
But we stay open because it's more kind of, if we have the time, we'll go and read them. And also I can't stand the thought of missing out on something great that didn't get sent to me. So I have it open anyway. But it very much is that we kind of look at our own time, try and work it out that way. And if I'm really slammed for a few weeks, my submissions will just have to wait. It's sort of that sort of calculations.
Yeah. And I think anyone who's sort of looked under the hood a little bit understands that that will always be the way for, you know, the other agents I've spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
The priority is always with your pre-existing clients. They have to come first.
Yeah, I mean, they're the people that we actually have an ongoing relationship, the people we have a duty for. Mm-hmm. I feel really protective of them and I really care about their careers and I never want them to feel like they're not a priority. They are completely our priority. I love discovering new books. It's one of the most exciting things, but I wouldn't be a good agent if I wasn't putting my existing clients first.
Yeah, of course. And from a writer's perspective, why would they want you to be an agent if you weren't putting your clients first?
Yeah, if you want to be someone's client, you want to be the priority and
exactly,
you would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's dial it back a bit before we get into the nitty-gritty and the details. Mm-hmm. Where did you get your start in publishing?
It was a slightly weird route. So I don't think I knew that publishing even really existed beyond the fact that books lived on shelves until the end of uni, and everyone that I lived with and all of my friends were applying for grad courses and had careers planned out, and I just panicked, thought about what I actually liked and what I was good at, and it wasn't a very long list, but books came quite high up on that. So I emailed a few people just out of the blue, had a couple of conversations with people, and was lucky enough to get a couple of weeks of work experience at Random House. turns out it was very weird timing because it was when it was merging to Penguin. Wow. I was having a lovely week. I had the best time. Everyone else looked a bit stressed and I didn't quite work out why until afterwards that it was literally like the 2 weeks of the merger.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I was working in their children's editorial team, and because it's publishing and it was it was only work experience, so it was unpaid. I was sneaking a sleeping bag into the office, hiding it under the desk, and then going to various friends' sofas and things like that. But I just loved being around so many books and being around children's books. I think I hadn't thought about them in the same way before. So I then, when that was like kind of Easter time, and then in the summer I applied for the Penguin summer internship scheme.
Yeah.
I haven't spoken that much today.
That's
thank you. So the internship scheme, which was brilliant, that was paid, and it was partly in marketing and partly in editorial for Michael Joseph, who do kind of really big commercial stuff. And it was great fun. It was surprisingly glamorous. I became the go-to person for sourcing personalized biscuits.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was honestly, basically 90% of my job. I found biscuits that looked exactly like one of Sue Perkins's dogs.
Wow.
And other biscuits that were like mock-up penguin covers, but with various celebrity names on it. Weirdly, was a huge part of my job.
I was going to ask what you did, but they
basically biscuits. Biscuits, and I do remember one day spray painting 1,000 dummies gold because someone was doing a book kind of about whoever the first royal baby was had just been born. So the marketing team, it was a very interesting place to be, and you know, lots of very weird but fun job aspects of it.
Yeah,
but I missed children's, and I missed that kind of burst of creativity. So someone got in touch offering a role at Egmont in the editorial team.
Mm-hmm.
And when I interviewed for it, I was shocked to find that I got it. And I think, again, it was honestly down to I worked in some very weird eco theme park during the summers at uni. And one of the editors had been there, and I honestly think that's what got me the job. We just talked about that, didn't talk about books or any of my actual skills.
Well, there you go.
I loved it there. It was great. And I did a bit of commissioning. I actually only ever really commissioned one book, which was The Poet X. And I loved that experience. I loved working really closely with authors and realized that actually what I was good at was that early commissioning part. Like I put together a whole pitch about like exactly who would buy this book and what music they were listening to and what films they were watching and all sorts of things. And it's that sort of thing I really enjoyed. And I realized that kind of agenting maybe is a better fit. That's a bigger part of the job there. So, and then I was lucky enough that Claire Wallace asked me to cover her maternity leave. And then I just stayed.
And I never left.
Never left. So we're like, would you theoretically like to say, yes, please, I'm never leaving. Just kind of force myself in there.
Was it a hard transition going from working for a publisher and editorial to becoming an agent?
Yes. Well, yes and no. I was really lucky in that I had a whole list to cover. I didn't have to build my list from scratch at the start.
Oh, okay.
Because I think that's one of the hardest parts of starting agenting is building your list and you have to build a sort of... You have to be reasonably well known enough for people to want to work with you. It sort of is self-perpetuating once it starts going, but it's hard to get started. But I was lucky enough that for the first year, I was running someone else's list. So every problem that came up,
of course,
I had a chance to kind of practice is the wrong word. It was an actual job. I was doing stuff, but I kind of experienced what it looked like to have a full list before I then went and built my own. So although the transition was hard, I had all of that background. And in some ways, coming from editorial really helped. I still feel like I can kind of read between the lines a little bit when editors email, or know what they're referring to and understand kind of the time things take. I mean, publishing is so slow, and knowing what the editors are probably doing in those gaps is quite reassuring, especially when your clients are like, I've not heard anything for 3 months. Is anything happening here? I can be like, yes, actually, here's the stages it's going through.
Oh, yeah. So when you came on as maternity leave cover, took on Claire Wallace's list. I'm guessing you didn't add anything to that list while she was away.
I took on a couple of people. Took on Rashmi Siddishpandi back then as well, actually, who's still on my list now, and a couple of other people. Lisa Richardson, who has a YA coming in the future as well. But I took them on as myself. By the time I was taking them on, I kind of knew I was going to stay. Because I think lists are really personal.
Yeah.
And it would have felt odd to add people to Claire's list without her choosing them. I think it's so much about personal taste and personal connection. I wouldn't have felt comfortable being like, oh, I found this great author and now you've got to look after them. Goodbye. Like, what if they didn't think they were great?
Yeah.
So I sort of did a tiny bit of list building of my own while I was covering Claire's list, but really didn't take on much until I had my own. I just think, yeah, I mean, we, as an agency, we're really close. We talk all the time. Chloe might have mentioned, like, we discuss everything. But ultimately, a list is still oddly personal. I think more so than a publisher's list in some ways.
Yeah, I think so. Because the publisher's list is more of a commercial outlook. Whereas yours is more of like, I mean, the relationship between an author and their agent is a very like personal business arrangement.
Definitely. I mean, there are kind of commercial considerations. I'm taking on things that I hope will sell, but also I have the space to take on things that I'm not sure if they'll sell. I just think they should. You'd never do that as a publisher. You wouldn't be like, I have no idea, but this is great.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to do that as an agent. It's one of the things I love the most, being like, I don't know where I'll sell this. I'm not quite sure who the right person is, but I love it. It's that sort of personal thing. And you're right, it's that relationship as well. You do so much as an agent, you know so much about your authors, and you're kind of more involved in like their lives in some ways, I think. It is a business relationship, but quite an intense one.
Yeah, I think from the agents that I've met or spoken to, it and the people, you know, my friends who talking about their agents, it's one of those business relationships that sort of borders on friendship in a lot of ways.
Definitely. I think the boundaries get quite blurred.
Yeah. Yeah. For better or for worse.
For better or worse. I mean, I'm not the best at keeping my boundaries up, but I quite like that. I mean, you don't work in this unless you care about people. That's the other odd thing about agenting, because it's very kind of, publishing as an industry can be a little bit introverted, but I think as an agent, you have to be quite extroverted. You have to want to talk to all these people. So you get to care about them a lot. And I know kind of lots of details about people's lives and who they are kind of on a deeper level, because that's what comes into their books, and knowing where they come from helps me kind of shape their books in the first place and know where to pitch them. So yeah, it's this very odd, we're working together, but actually it's a much bigger relationship than that kind of situation.
Yeah, especially when, and Chloe mentioned that everyone at the agency is very editorial and hands-on with their authors. So especially when you are sort of co-creating it, in a way you are like, you know, you're part of the creative vision. You need to have a sort of understanding that goes beyond just the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, definitely. And I think especially with some of my clients and the kind of the way I'm building my list and the books that I want to represent, that becomes extremely important. So I really want to represent people from underrepresented backgrounds, people who don't see themselves in publishing. Like, it's kind of a huge driver of my list, but that often means talking to people who've got an experience that I don't share, or a background that I've never experienced before, don't really have much understanding of. So you need to know them and their experiences really inside out to be able to edit. I don't want to kind of just shove my own viewpoint across everything and blank out everything that's important to them. And so it does have to be, when you're working editorially, much more of a conversation and much more about kind of pinning down what someone is really trying to say. And a few things I've kind of sold on proposal, or we've worked together on a synopsis, or we've worked together on kind of an outline and maybe a couple of chapters. And again, you have to know what the author is trying to say to do that, because you're the one summarizing it and you're the one kind of laying it out there. So it becomes a really deep, quite involved conversation.
Yes. But and that's also one of the, you know, one of the great things I think about reading is that you can experience so much and sort of build so much empathy about experiences that you have no knowledge of or never even come close to in real life. So,
yeah, definitely. It's that kind of windows and doors thing. It's, you know, I think it's windows and mirrors, not windows and doors, sorry, but makes more sense. Like you look and look out onto something new, or you can see your own experiences reflected back, and you need to have both of them. I think they're equally important.
Oh yeah, I like that. It's really good.
I definitely didn't come up with that. I just can't remember who the person was who did. Not mine.
That's great. Okay, so let's get into the weeds of the stuff then. Let's talk about the thing that I love talking about with agents, submissions.
Sure.
First off,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just to sort of get a gauge of where we're at and how busy you are, I guess. On average, and I don't know if it's easier to do this by week or month, how many submissions do you receive?
I'm sitting here trying to do the maths in my head. I actually don't get as many as some of the agents at our agency. Claire, I know, gets over 100 a week. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. I don't get as many. I would say I probably get 30 or 40 a week, which is much more manageable. Possibly a few more, maybe like 50. But I think I've found that because I'm not the main agent in a way at our agency, I'm not the manager, I'm not running it, and I'm not the very first face you see if you click on our About Us bit on the website. So the submissions I get tend to be a little bit more targeted, which is really lovely. I tend to find that I don't get quite as many that are just, this isn't even a children's book, or this is clearly never going to be for me. Most of the ones I get are things I have to properly consider because they have been chosen for me and there's a reason for that and they're quite good.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I'm really lucky in that way. I get all the good stuff. I don't have to do the first bit of like weeding them out.
But I mean, if you're getting 50, that's so it's for fiction, it's first three chapters, 20 pages, which I'm imagining is about 10,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 500,000 words a week.
It would be if I read all first three chapters of every book, but okay. I don't, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
I tend to tackle my submissions in the same, quite a set way. So I'll read the cover letter first, just to kind of check that it's not, you know, this is actually an adult book, or this is a book about something that I would never, ever consider in a million years. Then I go and I read the first page or even the first few lines just to get a sense of the writing. So I do that for every submission apart from the ones that are way, way off base. But honestly, we're talking maybe a paragraph, couple of paragraphs, maybe a page. If I like that, I'll then go and read the synopsis to check that the story holds up to kind of the pitch and the voice and all of that. And only then will I go and read the rest of the chapters. So I actually don't do that for, I probably do that for maybe 10% of what I get. The rest of it I've worked out before then. Actually, this probably isn't quite right for me. I think you know quite quickly. I think it gets quite instinctive after a while.
Yeah.
Whether someone's got a voice that you love or whether you're like, I just can't quite get on board with it.
Yeah. And then obviously from the synopsis, whether the story is going to pan out in a way that you think would work.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I ask for spoilers and stuff. I want to know all the nuts and bolts. I want to know everything that happens. I know some people absolutely hate that. And I think actually out of everyone at the agency, I spend more time reading the synopsis than anyone else. But I find them so helpful. I love knowing where the plot is taking me because you don't get a lot of context, even from a cover letter. You know, it's less context than a book. So you don't have the actual book cover. You don't have where it sits in the bookshop. You don't have quotes, you don't have the blurb, you don't have all the kind of visual clues that when you pick up a book you get. So I actually find the synopsis really useful just for grounding, not only for the storytelling, but for grounding me within the genre and the area of the market and all of that. I really rely on it. I love them.
Okay. Do you look for those kinds of things, you know, in an ideal cover letter? Would there be those kinds of things laid out there? Is that something you like to see?
Yeah, I find it really helpful. I mean, it's your kind of your only clue into it. So yeah, an ideal cover letter. I'd love one that had like a couple of really good comparison titles, really clear. This is exactly what the pitch is and all of that. But I also know that that's a big ask, and I love pitching. It's one of the things I think I'm probably best at out of my job. I adore it, but not every good writer is a good pitcher. They're not necessarily the same thing. So I do cut people a bit of slack, and that's why I spend so much time on the synopsis as well. But yeah, ideally, yeah, I'd love it all just like in the cover letter to start with. That would make my life so much easier.
Yeah, that's the thing that I hear a lot, is that you can really help your submission by doing some sort of your own market research and really finding how this would fit, because agents will be able to get on board with it a lot quicker if you lay that out for them.
Definitely. And I mean, I think people get quite hung up on the idea of comparison titles, and they look for books that are exactly the same or 99% the same. But I literally, when I'm submitting, I use lines like "for fans of," or "this would sit on a shelf alongside." And then you can kind of widen it out. It's much more about positioning it literally within a bookshop than for saying this is exactly like this book. But it's so helpful when someone does that.
Okay. So when you are getting stuck into submissions, is it the sort of thing that you set time aside to do and just do loads at once, or do you dip in and out?
It's a bit of both. When they very first come in, I skim them just to see, is this something that I should be jumping on? And occasionally something in that will just stand out so much that I'm like, I'm going to put everything else I'm doing aside today. I'm going to make a lot of people very annoyed at me, and I'm going to just read this submission. But most of the time, I will file it to look at in more detail later, because I think I need a certain amount in uninterrupted time to consider them properly. And I kind of, it sounds really stupid, and it's out, but I do think you have to be in a certain mindset to consider them. I have to feel kind of awake and engaged and creative. And so that doesn't happen every day, especially if I know that I've also got 20 emails from pissed off editors and worried authors and things like that. So I do tend to do it in bulk, but I always have a very quick look just in case to start with.
So that cursory glance that you were talking about, where you kind of look over the cover letter, you read maybe a paragraph or so, and then jump to the synopsis, that's your sort of first glance?
Oh, no, that's more in depth. My first glance is literally depth. Like, I know. My first glance is skim read the cover letter.
Okay.
Just to be like, I occasionally have like, you know, I have a couple of things that I specifically am looking for. And if it hits that exactly, or if it's someone that I've actually kind of realized, oh, I've been in conversation with them before, then I'll jump on it. I recently sold a book called Cosma Unfortunate Steals a Star. And I'd seen an early version of it as part of a mentorship program. So when that came in, I skimmed the cover letter, as I always do, while filing it, realized it was that, and then did nothing else all day and just read it. But mostly, it's a very, very quick skim. And then I go back and read it properly, read the opening lines, read the synopsis, probably go back again. That's a much more kind of in-depth way of looking at it for me.
Okay. Right. And when you're looking at something, are there any red flags, whether in the cover letter, the synopsis, or the manuscript itself, that give you pause about a submission?
I don't think there's anything that's a complete red flag. I would never ever, you put this and I bin it set up.
Other than obviously something you don't represent.
Something I literally don't represent. Yeah. But even then you'd probably get a reply, just me being like, yeah, I don't actually represent this. I suppose things that would make me pause. In the cover letter, I find it really worrying when people say, there is nothing good in this area out there, which is why I've written this book. Or, you know, often it can be quite reductive. All YA is just about girls waiting to be rescued and
vampires.
So I've written something else. That just shows that you're, A, not very engaged with the market, but also possibly not going to be the easiest person to work with. So that would always make me pause. I think synopsis is nothing in them, unless it's like, oh my God, this has gone so off the rails. I don't know what on earth is going on. But synopsises are hard. I cut people a lot of slack with synopses. I think that's fine. And then in the writing, again, it's not a complete red flag, but if something opens in a way that I have seen a lot. Like if it's someone waking up in their bed and then they go through the whole day situation, that tends to suggest someone's just not quite ready to query that.
Yeah.
I think people often have to write their way into books, and that chapter is them writing their way into it, but they haven't yet learned to then get rid of that chapter. So it might suggest it's a bit early, but mostly it's anyone being kind of rude or derogatory about the genre or derogatory about agents we get sometimes, which I'm also like, yeah, why would you want one? Like, don't submit to me if you think I'm going to be a terrible person. That's really the only thing that I'd be like, I really need to be careful if I want to represent this. Most things I'm open to, and I don't think there's any kind of genre-based thing or writing-based thing that I couldn't work with if everything else was amazing.
Yeah. It's interesting hearing you talk about when people sort of do anti-comparison, I guess, where they say there's nothing like this. And then even if that was true, then it would be a really hard sell, because where does it fit in the, you know, in the bookshop?
I want things that are like things. Yeah. I'm actually about to go on submission with something that there isn't anything like it, but it doesn't mean I can't say, okay, well, there's nothing like it. But actually, if you like reading these authors, you're probably like this. Yeah. And, you know, you've put it on a shelf alongside this. That's why I should say you don't have to be super specific on comparisons, but saying that there is absolutely nothing like it, maybe that's for a reason.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, you take a genre like speculative sci-fi, mm-hmm, where almost the whole point is that the concept is as unique as it could be. But you could still say, oh, for fans of, you know, X, Y, Z. They're very different. But if you enjoyed that, if you enjoy that kind of brain teasing or whatever it is, you'll probably enjoy this as well.
Exactly. You don't have to be like, this is exactly the same book. It's just being like, well, if you like questioning the parameters of society, or if you like imagining what everything would be like if half the world disappeared, or, you know, there's various different ways of doing it. It's just giving it kind of classmates, almost, you know, kind of other books that it can hang out with, so that I know, exactly, all right, well, this is the right editor for it.
Yeah. I guess a good way to do it would be to, if you had your own bookshop, imagine where you would put this, like what other books would be around it, and then maybe those could be the comp titles.
Exactly. It's almost like, you know, go and build, make a window in your bookshop that centers your book but has a few others in it. How would you spotlight it? What would you who would you recommend this to? What other authors would you say, oh, if you love them, you'd love this? It's not about saying it's completely this book, but everything kind of, nothing exists in a creative vacuum anyway. So there will be titles like that. You will have read them, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be a book-based title. I quite like things that might compare film or TV or pull from other areas of culture. I like books that feel quite zeitgeisty, and sometimes that means the idea hasn't really had its day in books yet, but maybe it's massive on Netflix. There's other ways of contextualizing.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of comp titles for new and up and coming books with Squid Games.
Yeah, we've had a few of those. Yeah, but exactly, that shows me exactly what you mean, though. If you're saying Squid Games, it's like, okay, so it's violent. It's looking at kind of, you know, our obsession with reality TV, but also there's a kind of societal thing along there. It's about kind of extremes and how far you'd go for something. It tells you so much.
Yeah.
Or you could be leaning into like the more cultural side. Actually, it's kind of career inspired, and it builds on kind of, or not even Korean, but maybe it's another background, but it builds on kind of how media works within that culture.
Yeah.
And that culture's specific societal issues. There's so many different ways of using it. I just need some context.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Or with Squid Games, it could just be you're thinking about violent children's games.
That exactly. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that deep lethal. Either. It could just be this is lethal.
Yeah. Okay, so it is the final week of September 2022. You are open to submissions. What are you looking out for? What are you hoping to add to your list this year?
So I've really been concentrating on building the graphic novel side of my list. I love graphic novels. I think they're awesome. I think they're such an exciting new way, well, not new, new for the UK market way of storytelling. And you know, Heartstopper's done incredibly. It's lovely to see so many people engage with it. I'd love something in that space. not necessarily a heartstopper again, although like if you're writing that and illustrating that, please send it to me. I would 100% love a new heartstopper. But anything that's really exploring kind of how illustration and text work together, how you can push the boundaries there, anything graphic novel-y, I'm really down for. I would like to find something in the romantasy space. It's, you know, when we were talking about kind of the stereotypical YA with swoony vampires, I actually want that. I'd love a sexy vampire book. Yeah, please send that to
love
me.
Triangles, enemies
yeah,
to lovers.
All of that. I love an enemies to lovers, only one bed, various, you know, can't decide if I'm going to stab you or kiss you. I want that. I'd love something like that. I actually don't have anything like that on my list. And then kind of in the younger space, I love really like out there funny chapter books or young readers. I mean, I loved Grimwood. I think that is absolutely genius. And I'd love something a bit like that. Just something that feels very kind of fresh and funny and silly, but like has a bit of an edge to it. I grew up reading all of the Series of Unfortunate Events and that sort of thing. And I think that sort of humour totally still engages kids all over the place. I'd love something like that. I'd love to find in middle grade, I'd really like to find another kind of big cinematic adventure. That's the sort of books I always love reading, but I'd also love to find something that has kind of more queer characters in middle grade. I think there's a lot in YA now. It's really opened up in terms of inclusivity, but
yeah,
not tons in the middle grade space. I'd, you know, there are a few books about kind of starting to realize your identity as someone who's LGBTQA, but there's not tons where that's just part of it.
Yeah.
I'd like to find more like that. But also, I mean, I'm really open. I haven't got my next big thing. I like being kind of taken by surprise by things. I don't think anything that I've sold this year or that's been a big success to me is something that I thought I was looking for. They've just kind of really hit the spot. I mean, I'm always looking for an interesting voice. We're a very commercial agency, so I like things that feel like they could be big and commercial. You know, I don't think commercial's a dirty word. I really like it. I love books that could be on supermarket shelves, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am looking to raise voices who've been previously marginalised. So, again, that's something I really want to focus on. But I know it's a really wide list. That's probably not actually that helpful.
I think that was great because you've got enough specifics in there, but then also open to most things. And
I mean, basically
just
send me every book if you think it's good.
Send everything.
Literally everything. Children's books only, but everything.
Awesome. No, I think that's going to be very helpful, especially to people who are on the hunt for an agent to add to their list of agents to submit to.
Okay.
And before we get onto the final question, have to ask, have you ever wanted to write yourself?
As a kid, definitely. My house was full of like little notebooks where I'd created books or, you know, pulled all the pages out and stuck them back together differently and created a little book. And I used to, cool. Yeah, they were great. Although my sister was more of an illustrator, so hers always looked better than me. I was really upset by it. And I used to get like overly involved in homework and write really long. You know, we had to write a story and mine would be like 20 pages. And I now feel extremely sorry for the teachers. Less so now that I work in publishing. I think, you know, I know how hard it is and I know what I'm good at and I'm a good editor, but I don't know where you get the ideas from. I did, in lockdown, I tried to write something and I wrote four chapters and it was just people walking into rooms. I couldn't somehow write the scene. They just like arrived at the scenes. It was so ridiculous. I think that maybe kind of made a bit of a marker that possibly writing isn't for me. I'm much more of an editor.
Sure.
Much better in the background.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. To be honest, I'm pretty sure I've watched movies and television where it's just people walking into rooms.
And there were great scenes of people walking into rooms, but nothing happened in them. I realized I couldn't write a conversation. Right. So they'd walk into the room and then I'd be like, okay, next scene.
It's not the West Wing style, like power conversation as they walk through the corridors.
No, it is people just walking through the corridors in silence.
Okay. Amazing. Amazing. Well, that brings us to the final question, which as always is, if you were stranded on a desert island, which book would you take with you?
So the smart ass part of me wants to say a desert island survival guide or any sort of self-help manual. But that's clearly not the answer that these questions are actually for.
It can be if that's, you know, what you want to put out there into the world.
No, I mean, I think really the real answer is Charmed Life by Dan Owen Jones. I loved that book so much when I was a kid, so much so that I stole it from our school library and then we moved away and I never gave it back.
Oh,
and I felt guilty about it for years, but like in a kind of proud of myself way as well. I was just like, I don't care. I love this so much. I can't possibly not have it. No one else will love it as much as me, so it doesn't matter. It's kind of the way I thought. But I just think I could read that over and over and still love it. It's everything I love in a kid's book, like everything. It really kind of, it has magic, it has humor, it's a really clever way of looking at the world, it's got great characters, it's got the first really nasty female character I ever really came across. The main character's sister is just horrible. She's an awful person. And I loved that. I still really like kind of angry or difficult characters, particularly female characters, but Gwendolyn in this was like an outright awful person, and I'd never, almost hadn't known that girls were allowed to be like that. So I found it really exciting, and I could just read that book once a month quite happily, you know, like if I was stuck on an island, didn't have any others, I would go back to it all the time. I'd love it. So that's probably the real answer, even if a survival guide would be a much more sensible idea.
Boring idea is what it would be.
Much more boring. Also, like, you know, probably not going to survive anyway. Might as well have a nice time while I'm there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's great. No, it's always great to hear when people give an answer about something that they are so deeply connected with and like from a young age.
I mean, it's a little embarrassing. And also, I should probably say, don't steal from libraries. But I was 8.
You was that, and if you do you still have that copy?
Yeah, well, I've still got it. I could,
you could, you give, know, it back.
I could. I should pretend I don't have it, shouldn't I?
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for coming on the podcast and telling us all about your career and your work and your experience in publishing.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And for anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Lydia is doing, you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Lydia R. Silver. And if you're thinking of submitting, do head over to the Darley Anderson website and find out more about Lydia, her colleagues, and most importantly, the specifications for submissions. You don't want to be getting those wrong. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at Right and Wrong UK or on Instagram at Right and Wrong Podcast. Thanks again to Lydia and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1 pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.